Hello, this is the Love Letter Squad. I'm Teresa Ayers.
And I'm Janet Gallen, and we welcome you to another time with us on the world of love letters and really the importance of them. And one of the things that we personally, Teresa and I as the Love Letter Squad, do love about this show is we get to bring you people who have such compelling stories to tell and such remarkable accomplishments in life, sometimes such huge challenges to overcome. And it's always, but always about life lived beautifully in some way or other. And I'm going to go right to our guest today, who's Marilyn Carter, a recent Jefferson Award winner.
For those of you who don't know about the Jefferson Award, it's an acknowledgement for outstanding community service.
And this is so interesting what Marilyn does. It is so touching. And actually, I just want to say when Marilyn came into the studio, she was kind of jingling. And she said, oh, I guess I should take this off, which is true because it was making noise. And she said, it's my dog tags. And I said, are those actual dog tags? Because you never know what modern jewelry is in this world. And yes, they are actual dog tags. And now we're going to find out why she has them. Tell us what you're doing.
Well, I'm a very lucky woman. A young Marine sent my dog tags to me for my 60th birthday, and he had them done in silver. And they're a very precious thing.
Why did he send them to you? Why does he know about you?
Well, I worked with his mother, and we were good friends, and we worked on supporting the troops. We started out very, very early, getting care packages together, sending things overseas.
What year would this be?
Back in April of 2003.
What brought you to this? What made you...
You know, I don't know, but I do know that my father was in World War II as a Navy man, and mm-hmm. he was in the Pacific, actually, on two separate occasions, sunk off of two ships, and he brought a lot of heavy baggage home with him.
Oh.
And I was raised in that abusive, alcoholic, dysfunctional atmosphere. And so I know that when someone goes to war... It's not just the warriors, it's their families that are paying for that service. So
you're saying people come back, the men come back, well now the men and women come back in what kind of...
Well, I'm currently working with a young ex-Navy SEAL, and he seems very able-bodied, healthy, handsome, gung-ho, and he cannot sit and talk to you without... checking his peripheral vision many, many times a minute. So we're working with him to get him some support for reentry. That's an example.
Reentry back into civilian life, you mean?
Into the world, they call it. Into the world.
Into the world.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah.
So it's a fear he's carrying. It's a.
I'm certain. Yes. He was Special Forces. I'm certain he carries a lot of baggage.
And so I'm really touched by this dealing mostly with men, I would gather.
So far, I have mentored one young lady who had her own tragedy, and I don't think of it as a standard in the military, but she was raped twice during the military. And
by other servicemen?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And it was a very traumatic thing, of course, and so she needs a great deal of therapy, but we helped her get housing and a safe place to live and so forth.
But it's mostly men, you know.
Almost entirely.
And I don't know that we usually think of men as needing this kind of loving, tender care to come back. We tend to think of men as being kind of tough and strong, and they can take care of themselves.
That's right.
Can't be true.
No.
Talk to us about that.
Well, my one example is a young man that has become like a son to me, and he puts up a very tough exterior, but... it soon became obvious that there were certain caring gestures that he really needed. And so I gave him, an instinct took over, and I will badger him like a mother, and sometimes I'll be tender like a grandmother.
How do you badger him when you...
I will tell
him,
you will not do that. Absolutely not. That's not in your best interest. And then he'll look at me and just smile, and then I know he understands, you know. But sometimes they need that. Mm-hmm. When I was in Walter Reed, I went there to visit the amputees, not knowing I wasn't really supposed to do that. But
What do you mean, not knowing you weren't?
Well, I didn't know that that's not natural, that you don't, normally it's family, you don't just walk in and visit.
Uh-huh.
But I had talked to the head of the Red Cross, and I talked to a few people, and they assigned me a guide. A very handsome young sergeant, and he stayed close to me, and I realized later to protect the people I was going to see.
From being intruded upon in some way?
Oh,
Is that what you mean?
In case I didn't know what I was doing.
Uh-huh. So can we back up a little bit? Yeah, sure. You're nodding also.
How do you know what you're doing?
Well, I don't. I just, instinct took over. There were three different boys, three different instances. One young man who had newly lost a leg, and he was still very angry and very upset. And he was not open to very much, and I gave him that. I gave him his privacy, but I spoke to him respectfully and thanked him for his service. That was all.
You know, when I this is one of these times I'm going to describe because I wish it were television. If you could see Marilyn, you would see the loveliest looking woman who looks so lovingly in charge. I would just put my life in your hands and not miss a heartbeat.
Oh, I'm a closet introvert. Are you kidding?
Really?
The only time I can open my mouth, and I do it a lot, my husband will say, is when it comes to my boys.
Okay, well, that's good enough.
It's just natural.
But how, you don't have a training in social work or psychology or whatever.
No.
So this is something just
I
very
am an
instinctual.
Expert grandmother. An expert
I like
grandmother.
So I want to know where you went from, because I missed a beat, and I'm assuming others did too, where you went from your dad came home from the Navy. Mm-hmm. And it was difficult. It was difficult for your family, what he brought home with him.
Mm-hmm.
And so how did you go from that to going into Walter Reed Hospital? In other words, how did you start this process the advisor to these?
Well, back in April of 2003, I saw yellow ribbons hanging in a neighboring community, and I thought that was appropriate. I called and I said, how did you do this?
You called the individual people.
I called the city and they told me who had been responsible. I talked to them directly and they said, this is how we do it. And they totally helped me get started in my community.
To hang
yellow ribbons with service members' names on them.
Who were away.
Just acknowledging, who were deployed. That was it.
And then from there you did what?
Well, then I got a phone call a few weeks later saying, would Livermore like to adopt a unit? I said, yes, without knowing.
Miss Open for adoption here.
Of course, and discovered that it meant taking on in a personal way the needs of a particular unit of the military. Livermore adopted a unit of the 101st Airborne out of Fort Campbell, Kentucky. Well, after a short time, our guys were getting Christmas presents and trees and all kinds of good stuff.
The guys in this unit.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And so the other units, now, mind you, men gossip. They said, Mrs. Carter, do you have any excess capacity? And I thought, that's military. They meant, is there anybody for us? So, of course, we adopted the whole darn battalion.
Wow. And how many people would that be?
Well, that's about 100 per unit, and there are about 7 units, so maybe 110, close to 1,000. So I've been back there.
And they're not
times.
Men from your community. They're all over.
Some are from nearby, but they're from all over. And we felt that was very appropriate.
So how did you get then to being the kind of a counselor to these people, the men who were coming back to your community, then you took on in some way of welcoming them home with, go ahead.
Well, everything, it seems to take on a life of its own. If you get out of the way, a mission will take over and will lead you. You just get out of the way, let them do it. And so I guess I was able to get out of the way, and the next thing that happened, it escalated. We not only wanted to do that, but I was asked if we'd like to support a wounded warrior. That's a natural progression in my mind. To adopt a wounded warrior, that basically means a community will take on full responsibility for helping that severely wounded warrior re-enter the world, re-enter society.
In your community.
Correct.
So that means
they
medical
become a
help
member of our community.
And work and
housing, transportation, mentoring, you name it. Everything. We become their second family, their second hometown. And so I thought, that sounds like a way to get more closely involved and to really make a difference in an individual's life. So we did that.
So not just sending cookies overseas.
Which are wonderful.
Yes.
But, you know, once you eat the cookies are gone, and you do have a good feeling of support.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some of these boys that I met when I went to visit Walter Reed, and I knew they needed a lot more. Without real help leveling the playing field, they would never make it. There were boys that were amputees at their families because they knew nothing better. One boy, his family put him in a travel trailer on the back of their property. They knew nothing else.
What do you mean?
They gave him housing, a travel trailer to a young amputee, and that's all they knew how to do. He had no resources, He didn't have us. He didn't have groups like us. Mm-hmm. And I thought, that needs to change.
But he needs probably, what, physical therapy and
he
medical
needs
care?
Everything.
And,
he needs everything.
Job counseling and
the whole thing.
Emotional therapy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So we decided that would be an appropriate thing. So I did go back to Walter Reed before this. I had visited with the boys, the three young soldiers I told you about. Mm-hmm. So I was a little familiar. But then I went back to pick up my Livermore's two sons. Actually, the one boy had agreed. And then we got a phone call from a second soldier who had been talking about it. And he said, my wife is from your town. Yes. My wife is mm-hmm. from your town. What about us?
Oh.
It's tough enough taking on one. But the mayor had just asked me, okay, I'll support this program, but what are we going to do if someone from this town wants to be part of it, needs our help? I'll say, well, mayor, what do you think we're going to do? We'll do it. And so we took to it once, which has never been done, but we did it just fine.
So you become kind of a one-woman social agency. And do you have help from other? You must have help from other people.
Oh, heavens! Oh, yeah,
it's
the whole community. Oh, heavens! Yes, it's the whole community.
So, in doing that, you're not only helping physically, but you're creating some kind of a new awareness of what people need. As you say, your whole community's in it.
Mm-hmm.
You're changing the face of a community. Then,
well, there had been nothing like this before. Mm-hmm. We had our standard VFW and so forth, and they're good people.
What is that?
Veterans of foreign
wars.
Okay. And these are the usually older gentlemen who've been in wars.
Sure.
And we had nothing else. And there was no sense of making a difference or activism in the community. Mm-hmm. And when I was in college, I thought what was happening during the Vietnam War, the attitude of tasking a man with war, but then degrading him because he accepted the task. I didn't like that approach. I thought it was not right. But I didn't do anything about it. I was lazy. So I kind of felt that was what needed to be changed. You had to own the decisions that you make as a community. You better own them or don't make them. And I felt that was important. And so it's amazing. We now have a military families group supporting the families themselves of deployed. We have a Veterans Foundation, which sort of is the umbrella coordinating all our outreach efforts. And the city named me their military support mm-hmm. coordinator. And so it's just...
Oh, so you went from... So you actually have a title that lets people know who you are and what you
Correct.
Do.
Correct, yes. And we have a website and,
and
a board
it,
of directors.
Tell us what it is and say it nice and slowly.
Livermore Veterans Foundation .org.
Okay, let's spell that.
Livermore Veterans Foundation .org.
Thank you. So if you want to know more about it.
Absolutely.
And is this happening across the country in many communities?
Well,
or?
I think there are a few, but my personal hidden agenda is that I think this seems to be a good template for every community. They can tailor their response to be whatever they want it to mm-hmm. be or don't want it to be. And I think it's a way for a community to embrace their responsibility to their sons and daughters.
Well, and how smart to help people as they come back so they don't face the kind of perils that your family faced.
Yes, yes.
And you make, I guess, that the family stronger and the children stronger.
Yes.
And you can avert a lot of trouble down the road.
Yes.
That comes from an unhappy, dysfunctional family.
That's right. Absolutely.
And
I'd do it even if there was no collateral benefit. I'd do it because this young warrior deserved it regardless. But you're right.
I'm just talking about how smart it would be
but
for
it
communities
does benefit
to do
us.
Yes.
It does benefit us in the long run. Yeah.
So you mentioned one story that you like to tell.
Oh.
Would you?
Yes.
I'm sure you have several.
Oh, I have lots. But the main one is the current young man, and I do consider him as a son. He's a young boy. He was 22 at the time, and he was in Iraq. He came home on leave. He's a young Hispanic male, and he was going to marry his childhood sweetheart. She was 20 at the time.
That he
now,
left?
Yes. Uh-huh. So they were going to have their civil ceremony and later their religious ceremony. That's the way they do it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they had their civil ceremony. It was wonderful, small. They come, both of them, from very hardworking, honorable, but not wealthy people. So they had their civil ceremony. He went back to Iraq. He was out on patrol one day. He was tasked with looking for a green pickup that had been involved in a kidnapping. So he was in his Humvee, he and a group of about four others. He got out to patrol a perimeter, and through a dust storm behind him came barreling toward him this green pickup. And in his words, they threw an IED and took me out.
Now, what's IED stand for? Incendiary?
Improvised explosive device.
Uh-huh.
So his term, they took me out, which, in very matter of fact, the IED exploded right under his legs, and the shrapnel killed his buddy who was sitting inside. That's all that was hurt. His one leg was traumatically amputated at the scene, meaning the explosion did the job. And the other one, they had to finish the amputation at the hospital, the field hospital.
There.
Yes, right there. So they took him, medevaced him to Landstuhl in Germany, which is the standard procedure. And his sergeant, who had practically grown up with him through the service, was there at the time. And it was very difficult for him, too. But so the young man then eventually was stabilized and brought home to Walter Reed.
And had lost both legs.
He had lost both legs. Now, his young wife, who happened to be pregnant, joined him at Walter Reed and spent almost the entire pregnancy and the first 8 years of their 8 months, excuse me, 8 months of their baby's life in the amputee ward at Walter Reed. Mm-hmm. Now, I'll tell you, I thought we had one hero.
You thought we had one what?
One hero.
Uh-huh.
But that young girl at barely 21 and pregnant is a hero in my book. She never missed a day being with her husband. She, you know, I'd be home taking care of myself. She was there constantly. So I went back there.
Or having the strength not to just stay home sobbing.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Of course. Because he was a very young, handsome man. They had their future in front of them. And then this all happened. And I once asked my boy, I said, what did you think? Now, they won't tell you. It takes a long time before they'll trust you enough. But I said, well, what did you think when you woke up? And he said, in his words, well, I thought I was screwed. And in other words, his life.
Sure.
When he came home on vacation to his family, he and his wife and baby were in a wheelchair in a little bedroom in a very, very poor apartment with the rest of the family. It was very sad.
When he came home in a wheelchair
on vacations, they would send him home
on
leave once in a while. Well, they'd send him home on leave for a week once in a while, and
before
while he was still
happened.
In therapy.
No,
after he'd had his lost his legs.
Oh, while he was still in
he was recovery.
They'd send him home. I see.
Yeah. And I had since seen where he was living, but I went back there and determined that I met him. He was a very different person. He wasn't sad, depressed, or anything. In fact, he even told me, he said, I was lucky. I said, what do you mean you were lucky?
Aww.
He said, one of my legs was BK and one of my legs was AK. I thought, what? Below the knee and above the knee.
Mm-hmm.
He says, yes, I have one BK. That's lucky. Below the knee, that allows him much more mobility.
Oh, and he can, yes, for
so
a prosthetic.
So he felt himself very lucky. So I thought, well, this boy's attitude, if nothing else, deserves some help, some support. So I brought both, there was the other young family I mentioned, I brought them both home to Livermore. We were met by the Patriot Guard rider, the Warrior Watch rider, and escorted home. We had apartments for each family.
Mm.
We had totally furnished them, totally taken care of that, and made them as nice as they could be.
Mm-hmm.
And their families are all there and had brought food. And we welcomed them home that way. Now the young man, I met with Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory, and we have a memo of understanding.
Mm-hmm.
They will hire my wounded warriors.
Mm.
And we have good jobs. They have small homes. And believe it or not, this past year, my young sergeant had a baby girl.
Oh.
We weren't sure that would ever happen.
Oh, so a second baby.
Yes,
second
baby.
Oh, how wonderful.
Yeah.
So he came home.
Mm-hmm.
You said he had his whole future ahead of him when he left. But the truth is, he had his whole future ahead of him when he came back, thanks to what you...
When he was adopted.
Yes.
And he calls me his second mother. And that makes me very proud.
That is just wonderful what you do. Just wonderful. Taking care of men one by one.
Well, we helped him, believe it or not, give his wife... He always wanted to do something for her. And we helped him give her the, quote, wedding she always dreamed of. And the community got together last August and gave them a full wedding, catering, photographs, everything.
So they'll have that
it
forever.
It was wonderful. Well, and then the honeymoon, and that's kind of why we have a little girl now.
Yeah,
well, we're very pleased.
Too good.
We're very pleased.
Oh, I can imagine how pleased you are. I'm pleased just listening to you.
Yeah.
So what is the love letter you would do?
I've met...
And I know we don't have time to write the whole thing, but if you could tell us what you do.
I have seen so many love letters, and I am constantly amazed at why we are so fortunate in this country to have the sons and daughters we have. Every single day, every time I've met a soldier, sailor, they are so in love with their country. They write love letters with their service, with their daily sacrifices. And their families, who do without their fathers and husbands, they're doing it every day.
So you're saying they're living actions.
They're living
their
love letters.
Okay, so let me ask you something.
Mm-hmm.
Because we always say, and I do really believe this, that a beautiful love letter should be something on paper that is sent to someone. And will sit, you know, it'll be in the desk drawer. People stick them in the back of a Bible. They put them in a treasure box. They're somewhere generations later, and somebody knows something exceptional. How do you feel about putting something on paper, either on their behalf or your letter to them saying you know what they've done?
I have done that on many occasions.
Oh, you have?
In fact,
where are those letters?
Well, they're kind of where private things belong.
But you've kept them yourself?
Oh, yes.
So, but you've written them and kept them?
Yes.
So it's more like a journal.
Well, you know, in this day and age, email is a very popular
thing.
I just sent one, and I've done this since the beginning, to General Petraeus on the day that he was announced. I thought the announcement, I know what it means to him to have the responsibility again.
And how about something in email is wonderful.
Yes.
It doesn't last forever.
No.
And a letter will. We have still letters signed by John Hancock and Abraham Lincoln.
True.
They're in good shape.
True. Well, I have one from General Petraeus signed by General Petraeus.
Okay. So what about one from you to him or to anybody? Because you are, as it turns out, an important part of American history. You've taken an important role in helping soldiers. You're an important part of history. You won an award for it. What about something in your handwriting sent to someone, even if it's to your husband, saying, this is what I've been able to do. This is what I've accomplished. Thanks to you for nominating me. Thanks to you for being on my side.
That's really tough for me. I'd have to really work at that.
Yes.
I'd have to really work at it.
Isn't that a really good point?
Yeah.
Love letters, you do really have to work at. That's why they're such a gift. They're not easy.
No.
But it would be something for you to think about. And let this soldier, who now has this little girl, let her find it someday when she's a grown-up and see that she's in this world because you made sure they had a honeymoon. You know? Wouldn't that be a gift for her?
That's a good idea.
It's looking to the future. It's looking to when you may not be here. But it's something you can leave.
That's what's been very important to me. Is
of gold.
Yeah, that's been very important to me, that whatever we start is continued.
And in your handwriting.
I
think that would be, it makes me want to cry.
Well, okay, that's a good point.
So just to think about it.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm confident that every single one of these soldiers that you've dealt with has given you a gift of some kind. Not just a physical
tremendous
one, but the gift of understanding and
tremendous
love and gratitude.
Yeah. So tremendous. They have.
Thank you so much for telling about
welcome.
This. You are
you're
just
welcome.
A wonder of a woman.
You know, you said something earlier that I want to paraphrase just a bit, and it was astounding, so I wrote it down, and it's worth repeating. And that is, if you get out of the way, a mission will be revealed.
I saw you smile at that, Teresa.
Well, you know, when people ask, why do you do this, I don't really know, but I just feel compelled to make a difference. And if you don't put your personal agenda first, if you kind of just kind of say, I'm not what's important here, what's important is accomplishing a goal, then it's very easy to accomplish the goal. We usually make our own, set up our own roadblocks and cause our own difficulties. If that's not if that's not what's important, then if the agenda is the mission, then it's really very easy to accomplish.
Right. Well, and there's something about just standing back and thinking about things and mm-hmm. seeing what's wrong and what could be done about it and mm-hmm. examining our own talents. I just recently read an article in The Economist magazine about a person who just stood back and said it shouldn't be this way and took it upon himself to make a real difference.
Exactly. That's exactly right. It shouldn't be this way.
And if you think about it, sometimes, often, in mm-hmm. your case, for example, the way will be revealed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the ability to enlist other people in the mission.
Mm-hmm. And
because
you talked
you can't
about
do it
instincts.
By yourself.
Mm-hmm. Instincts. You said mm-hmm. it's on instinct. If you trust your instincts and mm-hmm. let them take over also.
Mm-hmm. I've seen examples of that. And so I'm second guessing myself less and less than
good.
I used to. Mm-hmm. I know what my motive is. I know my dedication to the mission. And so I just get out of the way and let that take over. And it works. When I'm able to do that, it
mm-hmm.
works.
Mm-hmm. So, for all of us. So yeah. What can we all do? We can all do something, right?
Yes. Everybody has the ability to do something to change.
Well, you know, you can reach out and touch people. You can write a letter to a soldier. You could write a letter to the soldier's family.
How do we do that?
Very, very, very easy. Put your thoughts down on paper. If you don't have a specific soldier, find a group like ours, and there are a lot of them out there.
How do we find them?
So someone will give you a name and address?
Yes, absolutely. You go on the web. You can search for soldier support, troop support. You can search for Livermore Veterans Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And many communities have many groups. And you just say, I want to write a letter to a soldier. Now, at first, they protect the soldier's privacy. You won't be writing to a specific person.
Mm.
You'll write the letter, send it to the group, they'll send it over. And then when they respond, it's their choice to release their privacy to
have a relationship in some way.
Uh-huh. And that's the way we try to protect them. Mm-hmm. Once we have that, no problem.
And these are physical letters, not email.
That's probably better. And, you know, maybe you want to help with care packages. You can eat some junk food and it's over. But what the men do is they say that the smells from home are the thing they miss the most.
Oh.
The smells from home.
Oh.
And the first thing many of the soldiers do is smell the letters they get.
Yes.
And the smells of the food. Whether it be popcorn or beef jerky, it's the smells from home. So you want to send them something from home that mm-hmm. has been touched by us, and
yes.
they can now touch.
Okay, so I'm so glad you said that, and I know we just have about 30 seconds left, but
okay.
the beauty of a letter
mm-hmm.
is that somebody who receives it is touching something.
It has your warmth
that
on it.
Has felt the touch of your hand,
yes.
and maybe the scent, and maybe,
yes.
you know, a lip,
yes.
lips being, uh-huh.
That's right. That's
thank
right.
you for saying that.
Oh, you're
the
welcome.
Beauty
yeah.
of letters.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
You're welcome.
Well, Marilyn,
thank
what
you
a
for
treat
doing
to
this
have
with
you.
Us.
Oh.
Thank you for joining us and sharing your wisdom with us. And just time to thank our listeners for joining us. Please join us every week at this time. And in the meantime, we encourage you to always put your loving thoughts into words and send them, stamp them, and mail them while you still have the chance.
Yes, and in letter writing, as in so much else in life, as Marilyn has said, if you just trust your instincts and do it, you will be making the world a better place for someone.
Right. So till next time, from Teresa
and Janet.
Bye-bye.
Bye.